Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from deep in the Yubliferous galaxy, on a small planet called Gekonia, east of the Albino Hills and south of the raging Leucistic River, comes the one, the only Gecko Nation Radio.
Good evening, Gekonians. I hope everybody's doing good tonight. Tonight is December 8th, 2013, and we have Thad Bungeffer from Ohio Gecko. And Thad is also the owner of GeckoForums.net. If you guys don't know about Gecko Forums, you're definitely not a hardcore leopard gecko enthusiast or just regular gecko enthusiast. And if you guys are new to the scene with geckos, definitely get involved on Gecko Forums. And before we get started, I just want to play the plug for Gecko Forums, and has a lot of information about what exactly it is for all you new people. Check it out.
Did you know that since 2006, there's been a treasure trove of history and information on leopard geckos and other species? Well, Gecko Forums is the most extensive database of leopard gecko history on the web right now. Take a look and delve into the past, present, and future of this great community. The biggest contributors, breeders, and hobbyists have left their mark there. Now it's your turn. Look, learn, and post away. Need a place to post animals for sale? Look no further. Visit geckoforums.net and become a member today. Gecko Nation Radio is proud to be the official radio show associated with Gecko Forums.
Yep, and that's right. Gecko Nation Radio is proud to be the official show for Gecko Forums. And it's a good relationship. I think Gecko Forums is just the perfect forum for what we do. Okay, so if you're curious about leopard gecko breeding and maybe you're not on Facebook and you want something a little bit more thorough and just that has more history, Gecko Forums is that type of place for you. Facebook did steal some of that action, and I don't know if Facebook is like a fad in that way where, someday it'll get phased out. I bet someday it will. I think forums are always going to be there, though. So, right now people are on Facebook a lot and on their other social media sites, but geckoforums.net isn't going to go anywhere, and it's going to endure. So take advantage of it, everybody. It's free. All right, another thing I wanted to talk to you guys about. I have a bit of a brainstorm today. I don't know if it's going to go anywhere or not, but I think it's a pretty good idea. And I'd like you guys out there to definitely let me know your feedback and share your ideas. I made a post in the Gecko Nation group today, and it's basically, there are contests that go on from time to time. There's one going on right now, and it's a contest that's basically the theme is best of, and they're doing the best breeder of the year, best this of the year, and when it's on Facebook, it's kind of like it doesn't seem very structured, and basically anybody can go on there and just like away or rally support from their friends and oh please vote for me, like this, like that, or mention me here, mention me there, and it doesn't really get to the core of any achievements or anything. It's tough to describe, I guess. I just don't think it's very thorough as far as determining actual achievements that people have made for the community. And from what I hear, and I'm not following it very closely, I hear that a lot of people aren't really being recognized. They should be. So my idea is simply that we do a very thorough, structured recognition of achievement award. And I don't want it to be like, the best breeder of the year or the best whatever of the year. I want the different categories today, and I want the winners, so to speak, to be receiving a recognition of achievement. And this way, all the people that have made their significant contributions to the community over the last year can get recognized for those. And it's not just a one-stop thing where, okay, you're the best of whatever because you got so many people to say you're the best of whatever, you know? And, I guess those other kind of contests are fun and all that. Whatever, I'm not knocking it completely. I just think we could do something different and a little bit better and really recognize people. And I'm thinking some of the categories could be like best evolution of a combo or a specific line. But it doesn't have to be best of. It could be recognition of an evolution of a line. Recognition for a new up-and-coming breeder. Lifetime Achievement Award. I'm also putting it out to all of you to please leave me your feedback with that, okay? And it's in the Gecko Nation group. All right, before we get started, and before I bring on Pat, there's one more thing you guys got to check out, and that is this.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David's Fine Geckos creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. Gecko Nation Radio is sponsored by abdragons.com, is your source for the highest quality dubia roaches, whether you're starting a colony of your own or just need feeders for your insect-eating herps. abdragons.com can't be beat in quality or price. They are also a huge distributor of FlexWatt reptile heat tape and have very competitive pricing. Check out abdragons.com online and on Facebook. Razor Sharp Reptiles. Like the name suggests, Jamie Carnes has some sharp gecko and snake projects in the works. He is very well known for his work with rare species, such as cave geckos, but also has some of the prettiest radar projects I've ever seen. Razor Sharp Reptiles is also known for high-end fantails and beautiful rainwater leopard gecko morph projects. Check out RazorSharpReptiles.com online and on Facebook. Dale's Bearded Dragons is your one-stop source for any reptile supply products that you may need, from Exoterra, Zoomed, Rapashi, Repcal, Fluker, and much, much more, and all at 20 to 50% cheaper than your local pet store or big chain pet store. They are also the biggest reptile supply distributor at most of the Northeast Expos. Contact them directly online at DalesBeardedDragons.com or message me on Facebook and I'll put you in touch with the owner. And if you're looking for quality food for your dubia roaches, crickets, mealworms, and superworms, look no further than MS2 Premium Insect Chow. Made with reptiles in mind, it contains no dog food, cat food, or chicken mash. Using only vegetable proteins and high-quality ingredients, MS2 Premium Insect Chow will have your feeders making a beeline for it. Contact mstent.weebly.com or it can also be purchased at Rainbow Mealworms and AB Dragons. Gecko Boa Reptiles is your source for the highest quality leopard gecko morphs and wild types, from white and yellows to radars, amazing tremper morphs, and rare subspecies. John is a world-class breeder and extremely knowledgeable. If you're looking for something truly special in geckos, contact John Scarborough at geckoboa.com and on Facebook.
Okay, everybody, we are back. And one more thing I'd like to add to my idea about doing some type of recognition award thing. And I'm thinking about doing it in early 2014 to recognize the achievements over the past year. And this, of course, will be the first one if I do it. And it's not a definite thing yet because I haven't worked out all the little bugs about it. It's definitely something that I don't want to be a negative thing where people feel left out or feel like, I don't know, like it's a competition. I just want the right people to get recognized for the right achievements. That's all. Simple as that. And we'll see if I can pull it off. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do it. But if you guys think it's a good idea, and if you guys think we can do it, and with all of your support and help, maybe we can. But over the next few days, I'll be chatting with people about it, see what we can do. Definitely leave your feedback in the group. All right. I guess we shouldn't wait any longer. I so much I want to talk to Pat about. He's got some amazing leopard gecko projects and fat tail stuff going on. And, let's just bring on Pat. Pat from Ohio Gecko, you are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey, David, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How's it going? How's it going with you, Seth?
This is going good. It's going good. We're getting to that crazy time of the year where everything's getting paired up and I'm getting ready to start laying eggs.
Yeah, exactly. For the people that don't know who you are, and because, you know, this episode will go down in history for many different generations to come, tell everybody who you are and what you do, Pat.
Oh, I'm Thad from Ohio Gecko, and me and my two sons, Dylan and Derek, started Ohio Gecko about 7 years ago, and we got our name come from our username from Gecko Forums, and no intentions of breeding geckos for a living, but it just kind of evolved that way, and I really enjoy it. But we breed leopard geckos, African fat tails. And now we're into some Western hognose and bearded dragons.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. What do you do on the side for people that, you know, don't know? What else do you do besides geckos?
What else do I do besides geckos? Well, I'm the head wrestling coach for our local high school. And mm-hmm. I'm very passionate about wrestling. We've got a great program going out where we're at in Smithville, mm-hmm. Ohio. I also do some contracting with the sports networks for the local, Browns football games. And last week, if you watched that last touchdown where the Browns unfortunately lost, I got plowed by Joe Hayden in the end zone. So yeah, it's kind of cool. You get to watch right on the sidelines. It's fun when the Browns are winning, but when they're not winning, it's not as fun.
Right. Of course.
We do some other stuff for the sports networks too, like get to work the Hall of Fame game every year for the Football Hall of Fame when they do the new inductees. That's about all. A little bit of computer work on the side. I try to stay away from that, but it takes up a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. No, that's cool. I think a lot of people like to, you know, we're all into geckos, of course, because that's why we're listening to this radio show. That's why I'm doing the show. But a lot of people like to know a little bit more about the individual breeders and what we do, you know, on the side. And, you know, geckos for us is usually a hobby. And some of us, it's a business, whether it's a bigger business or a small business. But it's nice to know where people come from and what else they're doing in their lives. Before we get into your interview, Thad, I'm going to go ahead and bring on Steve for the news. And you can participate. I guess you know that, you know, when Steve does the news, one of his stories is false. It's our job to, after he's done, it's our job to figure out which is the false story. So
okay.
I'm going to go ahead and, it's fun. We'll go ahead and bring him on now.
Good evening, Gekkonians.
Good evening, Steve.
How you guys doing?
Doing great.
Good.
Great.
How are you?
Pretty good. Our first story, the Python Conservation Partnership, was launched last week by the Boa and Python Specialist Group, the International Trade Center, and the multi-brand group Caring, who owns Gucci, among other companies. The partnership was formed to help conservation efforts of Burmese pythons and reticulated pythons. Wild populations of these pythons have suffered due to demands of skins used to make luxury items like handbags and shoes, and their meat and organs used to make traditional medicines in Asia. Over the next 3 years, the Boa and Python Specialist Group will conduct research and analysis and provide recommendations related to the python trade worldwide. Until now, collaboration by scientists, specialists in international trade, and major industry stakeholders to improve wildlife trade has not been accomplished. So that's pretty cool. They're, conservation efforts for wild Burmese pythons and reticulated pythons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Who's making all that noise?
I'm not sure.
All right, well, if it's not you, Steve, it's definitely Thad.
might be me.
It's all right, Dad. If you have to do something, just hit your mute button on the phone for a second. That's all.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
All right, that leads us into our next story, which I wasn't going to do this story, but at the end you'll see why I did this story. But last week in Florida, a ranger captured and killed a 14-foot Burmese python in the Everglades. The snake was sold to Exotic Love of Fashions to be made into wallets, boots, belts, and clothing. Hunters regularly bring snakes to this company, and it didn't say an owner, but someone representing Exotic Love of Fashions, Brian Wood is his name, quoted in the article, "They're in your backyard about to eat your pets and your children." So, about the Burmese python. That was his quote in the article.
Wow. How do you feel about that one, Steve?
It's kind of ridiculous if you ask me, but...
I know. I mean, well, at the flip side, though, some of these Burmese can get pretty big.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I have no doubt about that, but... I mean, walk away. You know?
Yeah. But what if the dog is out? I'm not trying to advocate that I like it, but I'm just saying, what if the dog is out in the back, you got a little chihuahua, and there's even a 6-foot Burmese out there, and your little dog is sniffing around the bush and it doesn't see that snake, and all of a sudden, you know, bye-bye, Fluffy.
Oh, yeah, they're not supposed to be there, but...
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they're going to kill the animal, I can see them, if they're going to kill the animal, I can see if they found a way to put them to some kind of use, and it's not just a complete waste of life.
Yeah, I think that's good. At some point, I saw an article that they were going to start keeping, using the meat too. So, I forgot it was restaurants or something were going to start offering python. So, which is, that's fine. Make use of, conduct studies if
Mm-hmm.
I know I've seen a lot of stuff on heart disease, that they're using Burmese pythons for studies on heart disease, Use them for that then, At least they are being used for something.
Exactly.
Just that one quote kind of got me, that they're going to basically eat your children. That,
That was in poor taste. I agree.
Yeah.
All right.
Our next story, in Birmingham, Alabama, authorities seized over 50 venomous reptiles, including several rattlesnakes, a cobra, and a Gila monster. Police were contacted when a neighbor saw a large snake sitting on a windowsill in the apartment. The owner is under investigation pending several charges, including possession of an endangered species and failing to acquire proper permits needed for possession of venomous reptiles.
And where was this again?
Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay.
And in Vietnam, a new species of frog was discovered in the Northwest Forest at an elevation of 2,800 meters of Mount Fansipan, hopefully I'm saying the mountain right, but it is assumed to be very rare. It was a short article. There wasn't too much about it. Pretty cool looking, though.
Oh, cool. Post it, if you would.
Yeah. Oh, all these will be posted on the Gecko Nation Radio Facebook page.
Okay, cool.
And then our next story, the U.S., here we go with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is considering the addition of 11 tarantula species to the Endangered Species Act. The species under consideration are native to India and Sri Lanka. If added, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service could prohibit the sale and transportation of these species listed. Many listed are currently in the pet trade, and it's a long list, and that will be posted on the Geekco Nation Radio Facebook page as well. And there's a lot of them. I went through and just kind of went through them, and a lot of them are in the pet trade right now. So,
wow.
And like
no,
in the article, it said they could prohibit the sale and transportation of these species.
Okay.
So,
I have a good friend that I've been with, Anastasia from NetBug. She's very, very well-known arachnid and insect breeder. I think this would affect her business. Wonder if she knows about it. I'll have to contact her.
Yeah. So that was our last story. News was kind of scarce, which, I don't know, I think I text you yesterday, no news is good news, I think. So.
Yes, exactly.
So that was our last story, and one of those stories are fake.
All right. Give us the ADD recap for all us people with ADD.
All right. The recap is the Python Conservation Partnership, Python skin to be used as luxury items, Alabama authorities seize over 50 reptiles, new species of frog in Vietnam, and the last one is 11 tarantula species considered for protected status.
Okay. And what was the first one again?
First one was the Python Conservation Partnership.
Okay. All right, let's see what they're saying in the chat room. Sea Critters says the Vietnam frog. Noah says the second story. What do you think, Thad? The guest always goes first.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'm going to go with the Birdman. Without looking anything up, Birmingham in Alabama, the seizure of the...
Okay.
50 endangered species.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with... Wow, this is tough. Steve gets tricky. Tricky, and, like, every week he gets a little trickier with this.
I think he's tricky, too.
Yeah. Well, he's honest to a fault with everything else, but with when the news... He's definitely tricky. You got to watch out for him. I think I'm going to go with the pythons being used as purses and stuff. No, I'm changing that. I'm going to go with the second story.
There's two stories with the luxury items. The first two are both. I'll go through again. The Python Conservation Partnership.
Right.
Python skin to be used as luxury items.
Right.
And then Alabama authorities seize over 50 reptiles, new species of frog in Vietnam, 11 tarantula species considered for protected status.
All right. I'm going to go with the Burmese pythons being used for luxury items.
All right. Thad got it.
Tell us.
Thad got it. The Alabama authorities seize over 50 reptiles.
It's too believable.
I'm happy, though, that that's false, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's
so
great.
And our new thing on the news is the herp history.
Yes, I love this category.
On July 13th, 1933, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the Public Library Zoo recorded Miss Grace Wiley as the only person ever to breed rattlesnakes in captivity. At the time, reptile experts said snakes would not breed in captivity. So that's pretty cool. She was the first to breed rattlesnakes in captivity.
In 1933.
1933.
Wow.
That's cool.
And it was a woman.
Yeah, look at that.
You know, it seems like predominantly it's a male, unfortunately, you know, mostly male, you know, hobby, you know, and that's changed. But to see, you know, that's awesome, you know?
Oh, hell yeah, definitely. That is cool.
Yeah.
What's going on in
1933.
What's going on in your collection, Steve?
Not much. I moved a bunch of the babies that were getting bigger, and I grouped them up to, you know, to breed down the road, and, you know, grouped them into little female groups, and, you know, and just kind of sorted them out this weekend, and I don't know, I'm happy every time I open them up. I'm smiling and talking to them, you know.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm trying to see some ovulations.
Yeah, I had a couple. And then my ball pythons, I started pairing them all up, which I've already got now quite a few lockups already, so hopefully.
Oh, you know what? Before we let you go, Steve, I just got a message on Facebook from Loki Reptiles. And thanks, Chrissy and John, for sending this. Along with the theme of the news, they said that this is the title of the story, and I'll send it to you, Steve, so you can talk about it next week. It says, Operation Dead Mouse Drop. And it says, a group of 2,000 dead mice equipped with cardboard parachutes have been airdropped over a United States Air Force base in Guam in order to poison brown tree snakes. How about that?
Oh, yeah. I saw that article. They had done that a few years ago. I think in, like, 2000 they had done it, too.
They had
done the same thing. But 2,000 mice don't seem like a lot, really, does it? To drop over a jungle area that, I don't know how big it is, but does it seem like a lot to you?
Not really. You're right.
You know, and then, you know, if I was a snake in the wild, you know, I think I would be on the hunt, you know? I mean, they are opportunistic, but I think I'd be going for the live stuff before I, you know, went for a dead mouse hanging from a tree. But
yeah,
I, you know,
and I'm thinking other animals are going to get to them first, though, don't you think?
Yeah, I would think so too. But the poison that they're using is, I believe it was based off of Tylenol. I think it's Tylenol, and it's only deadly to the snakes. But I wonder, I don't know, you know, other snakes that are in that area. I wonder if it could be deadly to them, too. So they could be doing more harm than good, but I guess it can't get any worse, you know, since it's already, you know, an invasive species and an outbreak already. So,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's not supposed to harm other animals if other animals ate. I could see birds picking them off fast, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I would think that they've gone so fast by birds that I doubt that it would make a big difference.
I just thought it was funny, like, you know, seeing a bunch of mice, dead mice flying down on pirate suits. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
All right. It is.
Well, Steve, we got the next White Plains Reptile Show is January 5th, I believe. Will you be joining me again?
I'm not sure. I'm still kind of leery about my van from the last time. So I might wait till better weather, unfortunately, you know, just in case. Mm-hmm. Then it gives me more time. Because I'm leery. I've been driving every day, and I wasn't before. I was saving it for trips before, and now I'm like, I'm going to drive it. Make sure it's okay, but.
Yeah. All right. Well, keep me posted. Let me know.
All right.
All right, cool. All right, Steve, I want to thank you for the great news stories and for the new category of Herp History. It's awesome. And we'll look forward to speaking with you again next week.
All right, great.
All right, cool. Thanks again. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, Thad. I think the first thing that you and I should discuss tonight is the Gecko Forums. And I really want to see, I mentioned before we started the show, you know, before we got into everything, I mentioned that, you know, Facebook did steal some action away from forums. But I believe that forums are always going to be, they're always going to endure, because you saw how it was so active in MySpace, and you're totally making a whole heck of a lot of noise, and, you know, it's one of those things that's totally breaking my train of thought, but... well, what I'm saying is, you saw what happened with MySpace, right? And now it's gone, and Facebook took over, right? So
yeah,
a year from now, 2 years from now, it may be some other type of social media thing. But I think the forums and all the information there is always going to be there, and people always have that. And it's a good move to stick with your forums and definitely not abandon them completely. So what do you see what's going on with the trend with Facebook, and how is it affecting Gecko forums?
Well, you definitely see a trend of people getting on Facebook, and I think the real key to that is on Facebook you post something and you get an instant reply. You get an instant where you post on the forums. It might take somebody 10 minutes or half a day to respond to what you're looking at. And that's okay, but I think the big thing with the forums is you do have that history. You can look back through. Like, you can, if you want to know what a Raptor is or kind of all the ups and downs of all the Enigma controversy, you can go to Gecko forums and search for that stuff, and you can learn about that history and what happened in between there and what the controversies are, what's the ups and downs of certain Morphs. And it holds that history forever. It's kind of like libraries. Now today, you wouldn't think libraries are still around, but there's that rich history of books. They'll always be around. And the libraries are making that transition to digitize to stay current, but the libraries will always be there, and it's for that history. And that's the same thing with the forums. They'll always be there. It might be harder to start up a new forum because of that. Because they don't have the history, but the ones that were already established and in place for years and have that history on it, I think they're still going to be okay, and they're going to come out. And you said, David, even like Facebook, something new could come out and challenge Facebook. We've seen it with the computer industry. I've been involved with the computer industry forever. You know, one time Gateway Computers was king of the mountain. Nobody thought it could be challenged. Yeah, same thing with Dell. And we see those guys rise to the top and dominate and come down, and just new technologies come along. And things ever change. And I think this key is being a breeder or an advocate of reptiles is being willing to change with those times.
Yeah. No, I agree. One of the things I don't like about Facebook is if there is an important issue or if there is an important topic, and it gets discussed in a comment or in a post, to try to go back and find that information, you know, it's not easy. It's buried, in the bottom of millions of other posts. And I think Facebook is great for just on-the-spot chatting and stuff, but as far as, like you said, as far as in-depth history, it's not that good for that. You know what I mean?
Correct. I think it's great for, you got a new gecko that you want to show off, or if you got a quick question you want answered, Facebook is excellent for that. But as far as, prodding and get a conversation started about a serious subject, you can lose, in Facebook, you can actually lose track of a conversation throughout the thread. Where in the forums, everything's kept in order, time-stamped, and, somebody can't go and delete part of the conversation and come back on, somebody new comes out of reading the thread and they get lost in the middle of it because something's been deleted. There's pros and cons to both of them, people don't like them. The other thing I know with Facebook, it's real easy to use, and a lot of people are going over to mobile devices. And it's real easy to use your mobile device with Facebook. They made it really easy interface. You just get on your phone and pull something, or you take a snapshot of something on your phone and post it, real easy. And I know the forums are working on that. If you get the updated software on your phone, the forums, you can do that with Gecko forums. You can get on and pull something, start a new thread very easily, but it's not as well known as like the Facebook app.
Well, what is that app called?
Geez, I should know this right off the top of my head. The app is...
Is it Tapitalk or something?
Yeah, it's Tapitalk. It's a free download.
Okay.
It's a free download in the iPhone forms or in the Droid apps or iPhone apps. It's TAPATALK. Tapitalk.
Yep.
And you can download that, and they have a nice interface. They update it all the time, and you can take a picture right on your phone and post it just like you do on Facebook, but you can post it right into the forums because it shifts through the categories. You can sign up for push alerts. If you want a certain thread to be updated on, it'll update you on that thread when something's sent to it. So it's pretty powerful. You used to have to pay $1 for it, and what they did is now they're pushing advertising through it for the free version, and they're not charging for it. It just gives you a little advertising bar at the bottom. It's as standard as other mobile apps. But if you don't want the advertising...
Well, I think $1 isn't much to pay for something that useful.
Yeah, pay $1 to get, or whatever. I'm not even sure it's $1, but whatever it is, to get rid of the advertising if you don't want to see it, that would be fine. But it's a pretty powerful, pretty neat app for the forums. And there's a lot of forums out there that use the same form that we use, and it can be used for those multiple forums. There are snake forums out there, and that they can double up and be used for multiple ones. So it's just not Gecko forms that it can be used for.
Right. Okay. Wow. I'm having a snowstorm here, so I'm gonna have to. I don't know if you guys can hear the snow guys out there making noise, but I'm gonna have to mute my phone in between my questions and do it that way, because I don't want you guys to hear all the noise until these guys go away. But Thad, are you still with me?
I'm still with you.
Okay. One of the things that, you know, we haven't talked about too much yet here on Gecko Nation Radio is fat-tailed geckos. And why don't we jump in and start with them before we get into your actual unique leopard gecko projects. And I think you have some really, really great stuff going on with them. But the one thing that a lot of people are confused about with certain fat-tailed morphs, well, this morph in particular is the stinger morph. And it's also sometimes called a zero. Is that correct?
Yeah, and this is probably the most confusing gecko morph between leopard geckos or African fat tails because of the way that it works. Zero and stingers, they were originally thought, JMG produced them, they originally thought they were two different morphs, so they got two different names. And they ended up being the exact same morph, but one has that the stripe on its back, the white stripe. So the white stripe, that's the zero. And then the stinger is without the white stripe, and it has that little like bee stinger at the butt of the gecko, coming down on the tailbone, right to where the tail base is. Kind of looks like a bee stinger. So that's how they got their names. That morph, and again, that morph was originally thought to be like a codominant morph because they got if you breed stingers or zeros together, you can get a patternless form, and that's what we call a super zero or a super stinger. But,
okay. Now, if it's a codom, how can it be? How can you have a normal here that's het for super zero? You know what I mean?
Well, it's not a codom. I'm pretty sure I bought the first super zero ever sold from JMG.
Okay.
And I paired that up with five females from different lines. I had two of them I had from just purchasing and trading. Didn't really know the genetics behind them. And three of them I purchased from JMG as they're supposed not to have anything in them.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought them to those five girls the first season, and we got zero stingers. It was a super zero, and we got after about 20 geckos, I had zero stingers or zeros out of that bunch. We didn't get anything. And I worked with JMG, and they were real good with work with me. I'm like, hey, it's this co-dominant. I'm getting really bad odds. So they had me sending them pictures, and Jeff Sr., he's like, hey, I got to know one girl that come from one of these groups. It was a non-visual. He goes, breed it to this girl and tell me what you get. And we bred it to that girl, and sure enough, the first two come out, they were zeros. So our original five we bred to, we had over 30 babies that did not display the trait at all. And that, I mean, if you could ignore those odds, I guess you could say it was bad odds. And you know, in gecko forms, and there's been a pretty good controversy about that. But I believe I'm the only person that bred the super stinger to five geckos or super zero, and not produced any from them. So I get a lot of people saying, "Hey, I produced zeros or stingers from first year breeding. How can you account for that?" And then the stinger gene hooks in with the patternless gene. So if you breed a stinger to a known het patternless, you can produce patternless geckos from them. Because of the
really?
The two genes align. So they actually make a really nice clean patternless out of them. I don't have any of those. I never produced them. I've seen people who've produced them. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. So you really have to know the background. You know, I get talking to these other breeders, and they're like, okay, I guess, yeah, my other line could have been het for patternless, or it was het for patternless. They knew it was, and that, you know, that discredits that it's a codominant gene right there. I mean, that goes back to it's a heterozygous gene for recessive trait.
So what is it? So what is it then?
Well, the zeros and stingers is heterozygous or recessive. They're recessive, so you have to have two recessive traits to show. The super form of it, it shouldn't even be called a really super form, but it was kind of done too late. But it's like a genetics. It's on. You have to have the one in place for this other one to be active to get to the recessive form. And I don't even know how to describe it accurately, but I think we're going to learn more from that genetic off of the stingers and the zeros. The more people it gets into it, working with them, the more things we're going to find out from. And we're getting a lot of aberrancies popping up out of that group. We're getting a lot of really nice orange stuff popping out of that. JMG's got some nice projects going on with their stingers and zero group with what they call a hidden gene, and it's making some phenomenal fat tails. So I think the more that we work with those, the more that we're going to find out about them.
Mm-hmm.
But it resembles a lot of, and I'm not a ball python guy, but from what I've talked to some breeders, it really is kind of like some ball python morphs where you unlock one gene on a ball python and it unlocks another gene. And you can go off of that, but you have to have the first gene in place before the next gene can show.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, I'm not popular. And these guys come from the same area as ball pythons come from.
Okay, so now I got a pair from you. I got the I got two hets. I got, well, one's a het super zero, and one's a het zero, I think. Or I'm trying to remember. Or maybe they're both het supers.
Both het super zeros.
Yeah, okay. So by breeding those two together, I'm surely going to hit on it, I guess, right?
Yeah, you're going to get zeros. You're going to get you'll probably get some super zeros, David. And you can possibly get some stingers if from my experience the stripe down the back, from my experience and all my breeding, that's a dominant genetic. I have not had any geckos that have had not that that don't have stripes produce stripes.
Okay,
I keep mine separated because I'm one of those oddballs that don't really care much for the stripes. I think I'm like that because everybody likes the stripes. I like the non-stripes.
Mm-hmm.
So I always shoot for the non-stripe stuff. And any of our non-stripe stuff that we breed together, I have not popped out a stripe. But if you got a stripe, you can produce non-stripes as long as that's not that dominant gene isn't homozygous. If it's a homozygous mm-hmm. dominant gene, then everything it hits is going to be stripes.
And you know what? I like the fact that what I find interesting about normal fat tails, and for people that are new to fat tail geckos, when it comes to normals, you basically have two types of normals. You have banded ones, and then you have banded ones that also have this thin white stripe that runs down the center of the back. I don't know what the history is on that white stripe fat, but part of me thinks it's kind of maybe a mutation that occurred in nature at some point and in a group and kind of just kept going and spreading. Because it seems like they've been around forever before, and it was never really considered. Yeah, and it was never really considered a morph, right?
It's not a morph, but there's definitely a genetic mutation to it. It definitely follows a dominant genetic mutation. So
It's not like
it's a polygenic like the red stripes or bold stripes and leopard geckos where you get partial stripes. It's either there or it's not.
Right. Okay. And what I'm thinking is, as far as natural selection goes, in the wild, that would make the gecko more visible. So I would think that these evolved naturally just to be dark and banded, and this white stripe pretty much makes them stand out. So I don't know. I'm just wondering if it's just not natural, and it probably was a wild morph. But it's interesting nonetheless. And I can see it. I'm on your site right now, and if everybody wants to check his site out, it's www.ohiogeckos.com. And I'm actually looking on the page that says the African fat tails availability. And I see the super stinger here that you have on hold. And even though it's super and it's patternless, you can still see the white stripe like as a faint underline. It's almost like the patternless is covering the white stripe. You know what I mean?
And I gotta tell you that you're talking about AFT 115, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even on the one above it, and I believe that's very odd. And I don't. We've had several of those come out, and I've had people buy our fat tail specifically because of that. It's like that stripe is underlying, and that doesn't even show up until the thing's full growing. It doesn't show up when it's like 30 grams, 20, 30 grams. It shows up when it's 30, 35, 40 grams, when that white stripe shows up on the back like that. It's like where the stripe should be, but it's not there. That is only come up out of our stinger and zero line.
Okay, now is that common, or is that only in your line?
I can't comment on that. I'd be interested in what some other breeders have to say. And all the pictures I've seen, I haven't seen it on other ones, but I'm sure there's more out there. But I've known I've had people buy, they weren't striped fat tails, but it showed that underlying stripe.
Mm-hmm. I spoke with Jeff Jr. at the show at Hamburg. They were there, and I neglected to ask them about the zeros. And I was actually going to make a point to ask them about them because your show coming up tonight. But I totally forgot about it. But maybe I'll check in with them again in the future. But I don't know. I think the stingers and these zeros are really, really cool. And to me, like, have you guys put the albino gene into this morph yet?
Well, the stingers are we're putting the caramel albino gene. We have crossed those, and we should hatch out.
Okay.
Hopefully we'll get caramel super stingers, caramel super zeros this year. We have the geckos to do it, so.
Okay.
We had our first year we did it was 2 years ago and we hatched out all females. We didn't have the boy, the caramel boy that we needed to breed back. So we hatched him out last year, so he'll be big enough to breed this year.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that should be exciting to see what you get. You know, if it works the way I think it's going to work, it's going to produce a solid pink gecko, I would think, right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm not for sure what it's going to look like.
Right. Well, getting back to that underlying stripe, now I'm looking at AFT 104, which is also a super stinger, and I don't see that same stripe, or it's not as pronounced. I kind of see a little bit of a striping effect going on.
You see it in the tail, but you don't see any on the body.
Right.
Yeah.
But in 115, I could see it on the body and on the tail.
The whole way through, correct.
Yeah,
correct.
That's really cool. Really interesting. All right, well, at least we got some, a little more in-depth about the Starburst. I'm not the
Stingers.
Star Super Zero. Stingers. I want to get into the Starburst now because they're right down below. Now, what have you found about the Starburst team? Because that's incredible, too. And this one popped out of your collection, correct?
Yeah, and this came out of I had a show I was doing with my boys back in, it was a really small show in Western PA, Western PA and Mars. The show's not even around anymore, but it was Mars PA. And I remember that show because every time we stopped home, they had the Dunkin' Donuts factory, and we stopped and try to get them, not Dunkin' Donuts, but Krispy Kreme, right on that exit. And we stopped and try to get them to come right off the assembly line. So it was a nice little, we always like that show just because we got Krispy Kreme donuts. But this lady was called up to the show and said, hey, I got two African fat-tailed geckos. I'm going through a divorce and I need to get rid of them. Will somebody take them there? And they come around, the animal rescue was at the show. And the girl come over and said, hey, do you want these two fat-tails? I'm like, sure. You know, I'm kind of paranoid about getting stuff. I don't know what it is. And I kept them separate from our collection, 14, for 3 years. And then I decided the boy in that group, there was a boy and a girl, and the boy was, at the time, he was like 100 grams, right at the 100-gram mark.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's pretty big. And he's the cornerstone of that Starburst project. So we got a... The second year, I think it was the year after I started breeding the Starburst. No, it was the same year. Same year I started to get the Super Stingers. I bred him to another group. It's like two or three geckos, and I didn't notice anything different about them when they were littler. But when they got bigger, I noticed a big difference in them than the other fat tails. It was my first year breeding, but I just kind of noticed it too late. And I was like, you know what, I'm gonna breed him to this other group. And I bred him to another group of fat tails the next year, and the same thing come out of him, and I noticed it because I was looking for it. And then this past year, I bred him back to some of his offspring. And the offspring that we bred him to produced, like, high-quality Starburst on all of them. It was just... And then the other ones that we bred, I kind of crossed into I bred some into the Stinger line, our Stinger Zero line. I bred some into, I bred our Caramel, a Caramel Boy to one of the girls. I bred a Whiteout to one of the girls. And you definitely can tell that there's something going on there different. And it's hitting 100% of them. It's not like it's not hitting all of them. It's hitting...
Mm-hmm.
100% of the geckos, I can tell that the trait is in them. And they get like this fading on their head, and their head gets orange. The bands kind of come up on the sides. They come up higher. The bands don't go down. And then the bands kind of fade out. They get like these nice purple hues in them. It's kind of like the bands going across them are dissolving. They're never solid all the way across. And then they get this orange base on their tail. The base of the tail is really, really orange.
Yep.
And it's on 100% of the geckos. The only way I can describe that genetic, it really can't be described as a dominant because a dominant doesn't hit 100% of the time. Unless it's homozygous dominant. you know. But I think if we'd seen this in a while, it would have been before, you know. It could be a homozygous dominant trait, but if I bring the second generation produced 100%, and that would mean the second generation would have, they'd only be 50% homo, or they'd be heterozygous, but dominant. So the only way I can describe it is a very strong polygenic trait that goes from one to the other. And when you breed it back to this offspring, you know, the trait seemed to be enhanced. It didn't seem to be. It was. It was like all high quality starburst.
Wow, that's very interesting. So, have you bred a male starburst to say a normal yet?
Yeah, that's how it started out. The boy was our original guy, and we bred him to normal, and 100% of those come out with that orange head, faded out, bands faded out, and orange base on the tail.
Wow, that's weird. So every single one is coming out that way then?
Yeah, yep. And it's second generation, I bred that offspring into the zero line. Like I bred a male or super zero to two of the babies, and it went over into the trait immediately. I mean, we hatched out, I had a hard time with our super stingers because all my heterozygous ones from that first year, I did breed that second year, I bred the stingers and starburst. I had stinger and starburst bred off to the girls I didn't recognize as starburst. So I bred my original super zero to those. I'm confusing myself here. I bred that our original super zero to two of our zero. Super zero to two of our starburst girls. All right, and then we got babies from them, and I bred the babies together, and we produced super zeros and super stingers, and then at the same time I produced super stingers and super zero whiteouts. And at one point in time, I could not tell the difference between the starburst super stinger and the whiteout super stingers.
Really?
Especially when they were babies. Yeah, we couldn't tell the difference until they got up around 20 grams, and the starburst stingers really started filling out.
Huh.
But they were white, like a super stinger or a super zero when they first hatched.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. And now with the whiteout gene and the starburst gene combined, what does it look like? Do you have any pictures here? I didn't see any yet.
We don't have any pictures, but we do have some geckos, and they look pretty cool.
I bet. I can imagine.
Yeah, they look pretty cool. We'll be getting those pictures out. I want to get our super zero starburst whiteout and super zero stinger whiteout, and then we'll start posting pictures of the starburst zero whiteouts and starburst stinger whiteouts. And I have fooled a couple of those. I've had people call specifically asking me for them. And, you know, I think we sold two of those this past year, 2013. But so there are some of those out in some other people's collection that they got, and they purchased some zeros, and they're going for that same project. But we'll be updating that project after we hatch those out this year.
Mm-hmm. Wow, very interesting. All right, well, we're coming up on the half-hour mark, Thad. We're going to take a quick break. And we'll be back in a few minutes. In the next part, we'll open up the phone lines if you guys like, and we're also going to get into some of Thad's really unique leopard gecko projects, which I'm very, very impressed over. So stay with us, guys, and we'll be right back.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David's Fine Geckos creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. Gecko Nation Radio is sponsored by Dale's Bearded Dragons is your one-stop source for any reptile supply products that you may need, from Exoterra, Zoomed, Rapashi, Repcal, Fluker, and much, much more. and all at 20 to 50% cheaper than your local pet store or big chain pet store. They are also the biggest reptile supply distributor at most of the Northeast Expos. Contact them directly online at dalesbeardeddragons.com or message me on Facebook and I'll put you in touch with the owner. Gecko Boa Reptiles is your source for the highest quality leopard gecko morphs and wild types, from white and yellows to radars, amazing tremper morphs, and rare subspecies. John is a world-class breeder and extremely knowledgeable. If you're looking for something truly special in geckos, contact John Scarborough at geckoboa.com and on Facebook. abdragons.com is your source for the highest quality dubia roaches, whether you're starting a colony of your own or just need feeders for your insect-eating herps. abdragons.com can't be beat in quality or price. They are also a huge distributor of FlexWatt reptile heat tape and have very competitive pricing. Check out abdragons.com online and on Facebook. Razor Sharp Reptiles. Like the name suggests, Jamie Carnes has some sharp gecko and snake projects in the works. He is very well known for his work with rare species such as cave geckos, but also has some of the prettiest radar projects I've ever seen. Razor Sharp Reptiles is also known for high-end fantails and beautiful rainwater leopard gecko morph projects. Check out RazorSharpReptiles.com online and on Facebook. And if you're looking for quality food for your dubia roaches, crickets, mealworms, and superworms, look no further than MS2 Premium Insect Chow. Made with reptiles in mind, it contains no dog food, cat food, or chicken mash. Using only vegetable protein and high-quality ingredients, MS2 Premium Insect Chow will have your feeders making a beeline for it. Contact MS2ENT.Weebly.com, or it can also be purchased at Rainbow Mealworms and AB Dragons.
Okay, Gecko Nation, we are back. It seems like Pete's playing the Blog Talk Radio thing. All right, everybody. We talked about a lot of Thad's great fat-tail projects in the last segment. I'm also going to post the link to his leopard gecko projects now in the chat going on. And you're going to see some interesting stuff. And here we go. Check it out. And by the way, thank you, everybody, that's in the chat room. It's great that the chat room is full. I love that. I know it can't always be that way, but the last few shows were a lot of people involved, so that's really cool. A lot of people, a lot of my friends in there, awesome. All you guys I think very highly of, and just great people in the Gecko Nation group, too. Matt, these geckos you're working on are something else, man. They're really, really cool. Where can I start? I think the one that I like the most that you're working on is the reduced super snows. And, in fact, the first one that you have posted here, to me, looks like some of the Dalmatians I produced. And very impressed. We'll talk a little bit about those.
Those are pretty cool. They popped up out of a surprise. We were breeding two different Mac Basio lines together, and those reduced popped out of there, and I got talking to some other breeders. I'm like, man, have you ever tried to produce super snows from Fasios? They're like, yeah. And I guess nobody's produced these reduced ones from crossing that. And, we ran the second year. We were able to reproduce them the second year. And I only sold three of them that year. We held on to the rest of them. And we had one breeder, Lisa, I'm trying to think of her handle for gecko forms, but she's up in the Toledo area in Ohio. I'm going to be in big trouble if I don't remember her gecko forms handle. And she's one of our moderators in the forums. She crafted it to a Max Snow Bull, Super Snow, I think it was just a Max Snow Bull stripe from another line. And she produced some incredible reduced super snows from them. Dr. Carrot Till, thank you, Angela. Dr. Carrot Till on gecko forms, but it's Lisa Brooks. And she produced some incredible reduced super snows from crossing it to another snow line. So So that the polygenic trait that's crossing, and that was good to see somebody else produce that from that line.
So you think it's an actual trait, or is it like just something that the fascia is doing?
It's a polygenic trait.
Really? Because I've had a couple like that too, but they're not as dramatic as yours.
Correct. I think, you know, you get a lion breed for it. I think from working with them now for this, was it 3.5 years on this reduced super snow, I got a pretty good eye. I think I could, like when they hatch out, I could tell which ones are going to be really nice and which ones are going to look kind of average looking. Even the average looking ones look nice when they get bigger. They kind of grow into it. But it's a pretty cool trait. And you know, I think it's going to pop up in more people's collections as people are working with the super snow stuff. And I think if people are working with Mac Fascios, if they get the right combination, they can produce them also. But it's cool to see Lisa produce those from our line bred to a completely different line. And I would say like the one that she produces is an A++. I mean, I don't think you can get better than that. You might be able to if we keep working with them, but right now, it was just good as the best one that we had.
So it's better looking than the one you have posted here on your site.
It's equivalent. It's equivalent. I'm not going to say better looking just because I like mine, so I can't do that. No, but you guys can look at it. She posted it out. I think she posted it in Gecko Nation. I think she's got it posted in Gecko Forums. And the name of her business is Carp Gecko. And I think you see it on Facebook too, but it's incredible, and it's equivalent to the one that the best one that we produce. So, but it's definitely polygenic. You know, it's just line breeding for that trait and trying to make it. We were breeding for a really white background and a reduced spotting is what we were going for. And we noticed we were getting them from this one group, and it was from our Mac Fascio group. So we stumbled upon it, and then we started breeding for it, and it got better. So,
is your Mac Fascio group from Marsha?
That's a funny story. Here, we got one. We picked it up from a lot of the old timers on there will remember Felicia. Whereas she's an old moderator in Gecko Forum. She was from Ohio, and she was getting out of them. And I picked up all her geckos. And it was marked as a Mac Fascio, and she told me that she originally got that from Marsha. And then my other line came from JMG, and that one, I think they bred for like one or two seasons, but they kept it within that group. So, but I got talking to them, and I found out their original Mac Fascios come from Marsha also. So I think if we get, you know, if I trace it all back, that Mac Fascio line, both of them come from Marsha. But if they could have been bred out to other stuff, we did have Tremper pop up in that group this year as our third year breeding. So there's some possible head Trempers, and the Tremper version of that reduced super snow looks almost like a super raptor. Like you can barely see any stripes on it. It's really light in color, and they look like super raptors. They're pretty cool.
Okay, well, the reason why I wanted, and it's, you answered another question of mine that you said you just hit on a Tremper. Now, I believe the reason why you hit on a Tremper is because you mixed it with the JMG Mac Fascia, only because I've been working with Marsha's Mac Fascias for the last two seasons, and so far, I've hit on Eclipse, but nothing else. And with the numbers I produced, I should have hit on an albino if it was in there. And I think this upcoming season will be the true test and basically seal the deal as far as having a pure either a pure line of snows that's only had Eclipse at the most. I guess because eventually my idea is because I really like to have a line of my own line of pure eclipses. I see that's what I'm going to get into next with you. I know you do, too. But I know that Marsha, is using a different female this year. So
okay.
I don't know if that Tremper's going to be in it or not. But we'll see.
But I'm pretty sure that mine are proven out to be only head eclipse. So, and
yeah,
you know, it's a good thing.
That is a good thing, and I'm a big fan of I like the trampers and stuff, but I really like that pure eclipse. That's just another oddball thing that's kind of hard to get, and it's, you know, it takes a lot of time to prove out and work with, and those are the kind of projects that I personally like to work with. And we got lucky with that eclipse line. We got a red stripe. I don't even know if it was a red stripe, but it was just a regular eclipse that I picked up from Christy, Christy, the Eclipse Queen.
Yep, Christy.
We picked that up, and first year I bred it to, we were doing like a red stripe raptor project. And I bred it to three females from that group, and they were all tramper, and we didn't get any eclipses out of that group. So then I bred it. I bred that guy four continuous years in a row to trampers, and we've never got a tramper from him. And and in line of that, you know, we got I also bred that to another eclipse group that we had, and we produced some boys from that. And I got two other boys, another boy that I've bred for three seasons, and we've got no trampers from him. And I got another boy I've bred for two seasons that we've got no trampers for. So my big thing we need to do now is prove out some females, and they're a little harder to prove out. To me personally, I think I'd have to run them through two seasons. I guess you might get 10, 20 geckos not prove out. I mean, I think that'd be bad odds, but if you run them two seasons and they don't have any trampler in them, I think that would be a good sign.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see how I do this year. If I have any extras, I'll definitely contact some people that are interested. And if you want anything from my collection, you're welcome to it. You can have first dibs and save you some test breeding. By the way, guys, if you guys want to call in tonight and ask any questions, call-in number is 646-478-5331. I see a bunch of callers in here right now, and I don't know if you guys are just listening or not. But if you want to ask a question on the air, just hang up real quick and call back in, and I'll know that you're calling to ask a question and not just listening. All right, Thad, this next gecko that's on the same page is the reduced melanin snow. Now, the reduced melanin is really interesting looking. Do you think it's a hypo effect, or do you think it's an actual trait?
Again, I think it's polygenic. You know, sometimes you get some snows that have the really dark, crisp spotting.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other ones that have really light. And you see this in the fascial line, but there is no fascial line in our reduced. I crossed fascials into the reduced melanism line last year for the first time. But that reduced melanism, we just had some geckos when they got older that black turned to like a gray. And so we just started working strictly on them, and they get. The bigger they get, closer to adult, the better that they look. We've had some that was like almost all white with like gray on the back instead of the dark black spotting. So we just kind of kept, we're keeping that line. That's another polygenic line breeding trait, and it's just another fun project to work with to see how light we can actually get. You know that the gray on the max snow to go.
You know, that's so cool. And you know what? When I these projects of yours, Thad, you know what? When I think of these projects that you're working on, you know, yeah, they're not drastic new morphs that are popping out, or you know, they're not like, oh wow, I discovered a new eye pigment trait, or I discovered a new albino. These are equally significant in their own right, yet. You know, these are things that even average hobbyists can, you know, likely stumble on. And if they're intelligent enough, or if they're observant enough to notice what they have, can really build off of it. And I just want to commend you for noticing these traits and actually doing something with them. Because now we're going to have more fun stuff to work with in the future because of it.
Thanks, David. With no new morphs coming out, you know, it'd be nice in the hobby to see some a nice new trait come out that's significant. But I think until then, you gotta notice these little differences and work with traits and just try to line breed for different stuff in them. I mean, I think that's what will help. I like going for the genetics and just see what you can do with it, but it'll help keep the leopard gecko industry thriving. You know, a couple years back, 5 years back, if you look, you had the raptor, the Maxnose come out, the raptors come out, Enigmas come out, and that's probably the peak of the leopard gecko world. All those new morphs coming out, and there's a lot of excitement. And right now, you don't see a lot of stuff coming out, so you have to find something different to work with and keep moving forward with the leopard geckos, and you know, make it the best that you can with them.
Well, you're certainly doing that, and you know, I don't know. It's just I don't know if you've gotten lucky, because how many of these things you got now? You got the reduced super snows, you got the reduced melanism snows, you hit on your pure eclipses, you hit on the Starburst Fattail. I mean, you've really gotten either really lucky or you have a great eye for this.
I honestly think it's both. You know, I think it's part of watching what you have and keeping an eye out on stuff. And there's also a definite amount of luck on it, too. You know, we had to have a lot of geckos. But I can say most of these projects come out when we had around the 200 to 300 gecko mark. You know, so we're definitely over that now. You know, we're over 1,000 geckos in-house right now. But we had that 200,
yeah.
Most of these projects come out at 200, 300 mark, and then, you know, we're breeding stuff back to each other and trying to improve the lineage, and that's where you start accumulating a lot of geckos.
But I know it.
Yeah, and that's what we do. And we do a lot of shows and online sales to keep those moving, so that's a good thing. But we try to keep that best stuff back, and we do get people buying that stuff. So.
And before you mentioned Christy, that's into the eclipses, just so people know, Christy is going to be on the show as a guest coming up in a month or so, and her operation is Ghoulish Geckos. So if you want to check her out. Quick plug for you, Christy. All right, Chad. You know, there's just so many things that you're working on that are just very important. Why don't we talk a little about your tangerines? And you have a few really unique ones. And the first one is called G63. And what exactly is going on with G63?
Well, on our page, you can see that girl on there. She's pretty crazy looking. She's still our main breeder, but the G63, we take gecko, it's numbered. Like the very first gecko, we still have it that we hatch out. It's number one. It's a super snow.
Mm-hmm.
First gecko we ever hatched out. So 63 is a 63rd gecko we actually hatched out. It was a boy, and he is a giant. He's 110 grams in season, 120, 130 grams out of season.
Wow.
So we bred him to, and this is a good thing, if anybody, we have all our geckos labeled. If anybody has this girl, I'm willing to pay good money to get her back. I can't remember where we sold her at, but her name was Ruby. And she was het for nothing, and we bred that giant to Ruby, and we produced this G63 project, which is that girl that's on our website. It's crazy orange juice on it. It's really dark. She's actually darker orange now than she is in the picture on the website. But that we line bred that again back to next year. We bred the giant back to her father back to the offspring. And we noticed we got these really nice orange geckos with different hues. And then the third generation is kind of when it hit out of whack. We're getting they almost look like white and yellows, the real nice ones. They got really high white sides, different orange hues through the body. We got a lot of paradox spotting on him, dark orange, like really dark orange paradox spots and black paradox spots and brown paradox spots throughout the body on a lot of the offspring, and they look they're pretty cool looking. So we just been calling that the G63 project, and that's not a morph name. That's our project name that we have for that, and it's easy to identify. We're bringing it over to, we put it to the JMG Bloods, and they produce some amazing geckos, really cool tangerine geckos when we cross them into the tangerine bloods for the JMG bloodline. We crossed them into our pure eclipses, and the eclipses that come out of that project are like, usually when you get an eclipse, they get, they're dulled out. They're not,
yeah.
They don't keep that bright, dark orange. And we brought them to our eclipses, and we're getting these really vibrant orange eclipses with solid black eyes. And they look really cool.
Oh, nice. Wow. You know, I am looking at it, and it does kind of have like a little funky white and yellowish type of look to it. It does. I picked up a couple really pretty greenish tangerines from you at the last White Plains show. They kind of look a little bit like her. Are they from her?
I think you, David. I think you picked up some G63 project geckos at that last White. We did a trade for some between geckos. I think. Yep, you get those fascios and that the white and yellow Maxino eclipse I got from you.
Mhm.
Yep. So those ones I do believe were from that line. I can tell just by looking at somebody. We didn't have sold that many of them, but a couple have been posted, and I've seen some on the sign, and I could tell definitely a G63 project gecko instantly if it's out of our collection.
Wow. So I'm just wondering what I'm going to pair it to now. You know, I think I got two girls, but I do have I got a couple cool options that I can put them with. I got a really beautiful extreme emerine from Ron that I was thinking about initially sitting here with.
I think that'd be a great one. We're getting some raptors from that grouping, from that pairing. We're getting some straight eclipses from that pairing. So when we bred over the pure eclipse into it, and bred them back, we got raptors and eclipses popping out of that thing left and right.
That's awesome.
Hey,
yeah.
I see some people asking about some contests, David. I mean, if you want to do a contest, we could do like a $100 gift card. I don't know how you do your contest, but we could do a $100 gift card to anything on our website.
$100? Wow, that's awfully generous, Dad. If you want to, that's up to you.
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, you want to make it for, we'll make it for callers, and let's see. Do you have a question that we can ask the callers when they call in, and if they get it right, don't make it an easy question, but if they get it right, they get the gift card?
Yeah, we can come up with one.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right, so everybody...
Wait,
go ahead, Ted. What?
I don't know if you want me to email it over to you or the
question
or...
We'll have people call in with their questions, and after they ask a question of you, we'll ask them the contest question. And if they get the contest question right, they can get the gift certificate. If you want to do two $50 ones instead of $100 ones, so this way two people can win, that's cool too. But it's your choice.
We could put it out on your I'm in the chat room right now. Why don't we see what the people want to do in their chat room, if they want one 100 or two 50s. Whatever we get the most replies
right.
in, that's what we'll do.
Okay. Go ahead, guys. Let us know what you want to do. One 100 or two prizes at 50 each. Hey, I mean, a nice $50 gift card, that's going to take the shipping right off of any bird or anybody. Okay. So far I got two 100s. Angela says, spread the love, have two of them. Let's see, Mike says, two 50s. All right, hurry up, guys. Let's get your comments in.
I like that, John.
Two 100s. It's kind of like 50-50 where they don't, you know, they, it's funny.
There, we'll keep going. We'll figure it out.
All right, I know what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it, then. People call in. This is the second half of the show. We're opening the phone lines to callers anyway. So you guys call in with your questions. I'm going to keep track of everybody who calls in with a question for Thad and or me, whoever you want to question or ask a question of. And at the end, I'll do tonight or tomorrow, I will put the names in a random name generator, and we will pick the winner. How does that sound? This way, everybody's got an equal chance, and you don't have to worry about answering a super hard contest question. And the winner will get the $100 gift certificate. What do you think about that, Ted?
I'm open for anything, whatever.
All right. I like that way because it's fair, and people don't have to think too hard, and, you know, I just like it that way. All right, so that's how we're going to
okay.
do it. So, guys, we have a first caller on the line anyway, so let's take this call. Caller from the 267 area code. You're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey, Dave, it's Noah.
Hi, Noah. How's it going, bud?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's your question tonight?
Hey, I was wondering, how heavy is too heavy for a breeding female?
Ah, that's interesting. Go ahead, Thad.
Is that a question for me? I can tell you how we do our breeding. I like my geckos right in that 50-60 gram range. I notice that if they get too heavy, I mean, you can tell them when they get too heavy. They get too heavy, we get a dramatic decrease in egg production or problems with egg hatching. So I like to keep them thinner, but then I also bump my heat tape a little bit higher. When our girls lay eggs, you know, 95% of them eat that same day. And that's because we have our heat tape at the bottom of the bins. We have it 95, 97 during breeding season. So they're thinner, but we don't lose as much weight during breeding season. My females might lose 10 grams during breeding season. I get very few of them get down below 10 grams during a breeding season.
Yeah, and Noah, from my own experience, when I first started breeding leopard geckos on a larger scale a few years back, just from experimenting, like I had females that were heavier, and at the time, like I didn't know as much as I know now. You know, we all learn, and I was of the impression that if the female had a lot more weight, she was going to, you know, be a better breeder. And I learned in that first season that that's not the case, and the fat females either just have bad, poor egg production or, you know, they lay duds, they lay infertiles. It's not good. So, you know, a lot of the professional breeders like to keep their geckos in a more athletic state and not so heavy. So 55, 60 is probably, you know, like the max, more or less, right? Right, Dad, wouldn't you think?
What's that?
I mean, I'd have to agree with you about 55 or 60 then, right?
Yep. I guess, you know, your giants are obviously going to be bigger and you have some longer girls that are going to be bigger. So
mm-hmm.
I even noticed with my giants that I have that they don't lay as many eggs as my normal size girls. So.
Yep, that's true. All right, cool. Do you have any other questions, Noah?
No, that was it.
All right.
Good to hear from you,
Noah. And yeah, thanks for calling. And I'll make a video of the contest either later tonight or tomorrow afternoon, and I'll post the video in Gecko Nation, and we'll see who wins.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Later, bud. All right. Thanks, Noah. Anybody else that wants to call in? Now's the time to do it. I see a bunch of people on the line, but they look like they're calling to listen in. But I'll try taking one of them and see what happens. All right. Caller from the 502 area code, you're live on Gecko Nation Radio. Caller, you there? Okay, I forget that. We're going to take caller from, let's see, caller from the 347 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Dave, what's going on? It's Jay.
Hey, Jay, what's up, bud? How are you doing?
I'm all right. How's everybody out there in Gecko Land? I hope everybody's doing good today.
We're doing good. Gecko Land has been retired. It's Gecko Nation.
Oh, Gecko Nation, excuse me. I'm sorry. It's been a long day for me.
I just got
back in. I've been having issues with my internet also. But not to hold you up, I have a quick question.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to know, during your groups, when you breed your groups and you put a male in with multiple females, how do you keep track of the eggs?
Well, I could take that one, and then, Thad, you could take it. When I put a male in with multiple females, it's basically a project that isn't very specific to me. So, for instance, it'll be a group of just female raptors, and
mm-hmm.
I'll know that basically I'll have an idea of what – it won't be any kind of project that is really unique where I need to keep track of each individual egg. It'll basically be just one of my projects that I produce a lot of. So it'll be like just all raptor eggs, and I'll know they all came from – one of these three females. But if it's like one of my special projects, I actually have those females in their own tubs, and like this way I can keep track exactly, you know, how many eggs came from which female. I know exactly at what project it is, so there's no, you know, missing out on opportunities with genes or anything. What about you, Thad?
Hey, Dave, I'm exact same, 100%. I got a couple projects the same way. Reduced Super Snows, like I took a group of those Reduced Girls. I did put three of those in, but I put that boy in there. So it's all the same project. But like if I just want to Reduce Super Snows, I would not grab a gecko from another snow line and put in with those. I keep those separate. So in a lot of my specific projects, I do single geckos per bin.
Yeah, and you know, being that you, UJ, you're just starting out more or less, and your collection is relatively small right now. You have the luxury of keeping your females all separate, so you'll be able to, you know, track everything very specifically. A lot of us have, you know, a lot of geckos. I mean, we're kind of, just because of space and time, we're kind of forced sometimes to, you know, group our girls up a little bit. Either they're two to a tub or three to a tub. I never do more than three females to a tub these days. And in fact, most of my groups are just pairs, and I have two females in a 28 quart, and that's it. So that's basically how I do it, man.
Nice, nice. Sounds great, then. I appreciate your time, and thanks for your answers.
Yeah, definitely, Jay. Talk to you soon, bud. Thanks.
All right, Dave. Thanks a lot, guys.
Later. All right. Yeah, Jay's a cool guy. He's definitely building a nice collection. All right, we have a bunch more people on the line here. Let's see. Who should I grab? Who's been on for a while? Okay, caller from 401 area code. You're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey, Dave, it's Chrissy with Loki Reptiles.
Oh, hey, Chrissy. I see two 401 numbers here.
Oh, yeah, one of them is my phone and John's phone.
Okay, cool. We can take both of you. You're two separate people.
Yeah, well, once we
hang
up with one phone, we're going to lose the radio show.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, what's your question tonight, Chrissy?
My question is with Ad, what constitutes a whiteout fat tail as a whiteout fat tail? You see a lot of pictures in forums and on Facebook, and they'll have, you know, like three splotches of white on their hind end, and other pictures you have a gecko that's like 90% white.
Oh, that's such
an
awesome, you know what, Chrissy, that is awesome. And that, I forgot I was going to ask you about this, because, and here's another, I'm going to add something else to this question. Now, a lot of times you see whiteouts that are like almost gray and black. They almost look like snows, and it's like snow leopard geckos. And then you see some whiteouts that are mostly brown and white. And,
yep.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, the white owl is a co-dominant trait. So when you breed a white owl fat tail to any other fat tail, you're going to get approximately 50% white owl fat tails. And just like Max knows, you know how Max knows when they hatch out? You can tell that they're Max knows, but when they get bigger, there's no way of telling them, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Some white owls are exactly the same. When they hatch out, they're very white. You can definitely tell a white owl fat tail when they hatch as a baby. They're very white, very reduced in spotting. There's a high contrast in the white background with the stripes or whatever is on the gecko. But as they get bigger, some of those white owls get kind of a muddy look to them, and you can't. Some of them as adults is really hard to tell that they're white owls. But again, with line breeding, if you get like two high quality white owls as adults and breed them together, you can make
Wouldn't that be fatal?
If you breed two white owls together, you produce the super form, as of today, has been fatal 100%.
Right.
So is that always going to be that way? We don't know. You know, it's just like at one time, Murphy Patternless Bills? You know, Bill Blizzards was fatal for a long time, and now people are starting to produce them.
Right.
So that is correct. As of today, the super form looks pretty cool. They always look like panda bears. They're all white with like a black mark on them.
And, hey, Chrissy, just hit the mute button while he's talking. I'm hearing a little background noise. Or just lower the radio or whatever.
There we go. That sounds better. So, yeah,
cool.
You know, I know people are still trying to hit those supers. And was it 25% when you breed a whiteout to whiteout, supposed to be possible supers? And it's kind of rough because if you get that fatal form, then they're going to be dead. If someone gets one of those to live like they did with, like, a Bill Blizzard, then that would be kind of cool. That would be a big boost to the fat tail community. It's a really cool-looking worm.
Do they hatch or do they just die in the egg?
I've never hatched any owl. I've seen pictures. Most of them die in the egg at full term. Some of them have hatched out and died within a couple hours. So and that's the exact same with like the Bill Blizzards and some other of the fatal combinations in the past, like the original AML or albino African fat tails. You couldn't put with any other morph. Well, Fridoff over in the Cross Seas, he produced the first one. I think it was like 1 or 2 years ago, and you know that gene was fatal for a long time. That's been worked on for 9 years. And nobody's been able to produce one, and he produced the first one a year or two ago. So he's actually got second generations this year. He's gotten second generations from him this year. So,
that's the AML whiteout, right?
AML whiteout, correct.
Now, I heard that the AML whiteout is also fatal in the het form. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep.
Well, I happen to have a whiteout that I got from Jason. I have a whiteout that is 100% het AML here, and we're going to find out. It's perfectly healthy and looks great. We're going to find out what it can do this season if it gets big enough to breed. I don't know.
That's a pretty cool project. Anyway, you cross it off to some different lines, and you can unlock some of these genetic codes and get some, you know, things start popping up and start being healthy. So the more people work with them,
Jason got a lot of cool geckos for that whiteout. So yeah, we'll try it. I think it's worth the effort, being that the head is fine. Chrissy, does John have any questions for us?
John, do you have any questions? He says no.
All right, tell him I'll see him at the White Plains show.
All right, we'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Dave, and thanks, Dad.
All right, great.
Yeah, thanks, Chrissy. Good to hear from you.
You too. Right, talk to you guys later.
All right. And Chrissy is from Loki Reptiles. Guys, check out Loki Reptiles on Facebook. And they breed fat tails as well, and they're going to be on the show in the future. And they also breed a lot of roaches, Duvia, and all kinds of. They got those really cool question mark roaches and the dominoes and all kinds of funky stuff. All right, let's take a next caller here. Looks like the all right caller from the 316 area code. You're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hi guys, this is Angela.
Hey, Angela. How are you?
Hi, Angela.
I actually got to call in this time. My phone's not breaking. So,
nice.
My question kind of goes back to the earlier question about weights for leopard geckos when breeding, but it's a little more than that. I'm wondering, I've been reading a lot about how it seems like leopard geckos are getting bigger than they used to be, and I wondered if either of you actually have seen that as, you know, experienced that as true just in your own collections, just that they're tending to get larger with successive generations, or, you know, yeah.
Okay, no, that's a good question. I think I have an idea what's going on, but go ahead, Thad. I'll let you go first.
Well, listen, when we first started breeding ours, we really liked the giants, so we're trying to incorporate giant geckos into all of our projects, and so when we get ours, a lot of people get our geckos up to 800 grams, and are these giants? I'm like, well, they're giant in their line, but we don't mark anything that way. Sometimes we get that occasional baby that just gets twice as big as everything right off the bat, and we try to hold those back. Sometimes we let them go, but other than that, I mean, I really, as far as size, we still got stuff, we got 50 gram range, but I think they're just, you know, people get feeding them regularly, and they get fed better, and they just get thicker. But I like to go more on, if you're talking about a big gecko, I think it should go more, like, on humans. You know, like, I'm 5'8", I'm 195 pounds. There's no way I'm a giant, you know. 195 pounds is pretty big. It's a good size, but if I was 6'5" and 195 pounds, that's a giant person. You know, it's more. I think you should go more about length. If their size is getting bigger, that just means they're getting fed more. I think we're definitely doing better in the community as how we're feeding our insects and gut loading. I think that might have been lacking in the past, especially with the hobbyists, but. It's really been pushed, and I mean, there's people like Marcy that's coming out with her a roach chow. That's an excellent product. You know, you got Cody's Pro Geckos. He's had his gut feed his
roach chow. Roach chow. Roach.
Sorry,
I like that. I like that. So you know, with that type of stuff, and if people feed their insects correctly, and they're feeding their reptiles correctly, you know, they do tend to get a little bit bigger than. In weight size, but I think that the length size is still where it has been in the past.
Okay, and I'm going to put my spin on it too, Angela. I think that a lot of people, I think, you know, now I've gotten my giants directly from Ron, and I keep my giant line only with my giants, and I'm actually developing my own Sunglow line. I basically, over the last few years, I've been crossing Sunglow, Supergiant Sunglows to Marshall McGinnis line, Golden Gate Gecko line, Afters, and I'm sorry, Sunglows. I'm all confused tonight. So I'm basically crossing two Sunglow lines. One happens to be Ron's Giant, and I'm not mixing it into anything else. I think in the past, a lot of people got some Giants from Ron and mixed them into a lot of different things, and maybe some of the babies didn't turn out to be huge Giants, and maybe they didn't recognize them as such, and you know, they basically didn't sell them off as giants, and they got into circulation as normal-sized leopard geckos. However, you know, there is some discrepancies about how the giant gene works. Some people think it's recessive. Some people think it's codominant, like Ron says. You know, I happen to think it is probably codominant, but I don't know. You never know. It may work differently. So maybe I think the giant gene is in a lot of these lines in some form, and I think people are hitting on it a lot more often. And, you know, just when you produce and raise a big gecko, you automatically think, all right, well, this is definitely a holdback quality animal. I'm definitely going to use this one for breeding because look how big it is. So I think, you know, they're just getting bigger by design, by line breeding and stuff, so, or selective breeding in that case. And then there's also the issue, like, in the future, I think we're going to see a lot more larger geckos in other lines, like from using purely fasciolatus. Fasciolatus are kind of heavier duty geckos. They're not huge, but, you know, they're definitely bigger than Afghanicus and definitely bigger than a lot of just regular plain Jane leopard geckos. And I, for one, have been mixing into my bell line, and I know other breeders have as well. So, yeah, I think geckos in general, leopard geckos are getting bigger, and I think those are definitely some of the reasons. So, I'd like to see people try to breed smaller leopard geckos, micro geckos. I mean, I know in the hobby a lot of smaller species are getting a lot of attention today because they're easy to keep. But, bigger isn't always better either. Sometimes people said they've had problems with giants. I haven't yet. But I don't know. What do you think, Angela? Do you prefer the geckos to be bigger, or would you rather have them smaller?
I really like the look of the Afghans, which seem to be smaller. I have an Afghan bold who's just barely 60 grams, and, you know, he's pretty sleek. And, you know, I really like the smaller geckos, but some of my Eclipse Het Bell geckos, actually a pair of them I got from Steve Sykes, are both of them are just shy of 10 inches long, and they're both over 90 grams, but they're not flabby with it. You know, they're not really, really fat. The female looks great right now after, you know, her first breeding season, and she's over 90 grams, but she's not super, super flabby with, you know, the big armpit bubbles or anything. She just looks nice and sleek. But she's a bell line, you know. So I just kind of wondered because she's big, but she's not fat, and so I wondered.
I'm wondering if he's got some of his giant line in there because, I mean, just shy of 10 inches at 90 grams is no way by any means a fat gecko.
She's nine. I think she's 9 3/4, and he's just about 10. So yeah, they're. Actually, I think I have some pictures. I could go post some on Gecko Nation after the show's over.
Yeah, definitely do that. In fact, don't you think Steve does a lot of work with the eFascio too? So maybe the eFascio in there. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, you usually don't see that in the bill. I've seen some big bills in the past, but the two of them coming from there, and especially coming from Steve's line, he's got some nice stuff. You wonder if he's, you know, he's got some giants that he doesn't got that, you know, he probably has a trap where he's probably breeding those over. I don't know. I'd be curious to talk to Steve about that, but those are big geckos for that length for bills.
And they're
clips. Awesome.
They're both Max Snow Eclipse. They're both Het Bell. She produced 8 good eggs this year, and all but one of the hatchlings was 3 to 4 grams. I had one tiny one. That was it. And all the babies have been growing really fast, and I'm not overfeeding them, but they're growing really fast.
I want
some of those babies. I've got several. The weather's too cold, but I have several.
Yeah.
But
put me on the list.
Okay.
That's cool, Angela. Yeah, definitely post some pictures. I'd like to see them.
I can do that. Actually, I took a few earlier tonight, so I can get some up there. So, okay. Well, that's
nice.
Kind of what I wanted to ask. So, thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
You have a good night. Bye.
You
thank you.
Wow, when I think of that, I'm almost like, all right, Angela, you better test breed that too, just in case. That's exactly
what I'm thinking too, but it sounds like some giant line in that, but it, you know, Steve's a pretty responsible breeder.
Absolutely.
I learned from the past, you got to test breed everything. You got to test breed everything that you have.
Right, and believe me, I'm not saying that, you know, it was, you know, he's mixing stuff on purpose. Of course not.
Yeah.
He's very reputable. But you never know. It's definitely worth, throwing it with a trumper just to be sure. But that's interesting. Big bells, man. That's cool.
That is cool.
It's the first time though that I've seen giant bells. They're very rare, but there are some out there, I think. I don't know. Interesting topic.
Yep.
All right, let's take one of these other calls here. Let's see. It looks like the let's see if this person's going to pick up the stunt. Caller from the 502 area code. You're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Trying to escape, you scooter? Is she trying to kick your ass or something?
You there, 502?
Yeah, check them in. All
right. No go on that. All right. Well, anyway, we're coming to the end of the show now. You know, wow, it's been a great episode, of course. Thad, I really like a lot of the things that you have going on, but what is, you kind of future, what do you think is going to be one of your most pivotal projects that you think is really going to, you know, really take the lead? What shows most promise in your mind?
You know, I can't, it's hard to predict the future, but I really like the Pure Eclipse stuff, and I think we just need to keep working on that. I think if you have, like, the Pure Eclipse, if you haven't known Pure Eclipse, I think they're going to be a good sell to other high-end breeders that want them for projects. And I like that Eclipse look without the albino gene. I mean, I really, it's got a cool look to it. So I think we'll work on that. I think, you know, a tangerine eclipse with 70%, 90%, 100% carrot tail with that real vibrant orange, I mean, that's going to be a cool-looking gecko.
Yeah. And then, I'm looking at the two, Ray, on your site. One's one looks like a Max Snow, and one looks like I got, like, a broad stripe going on. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, and those are the one on the left with the red stripe, that's third generation. That's our second generation one, and that comes from the one that we got from Christy at Ghoulish Geckos. And he's probably the nicest one that we have. We'll definitely keep him. This guy is the only one. I've gotten bit by a gecko and bled maybe four times ever in 7 years, and that guy's got me three times. He's all calm. He put crickets in there. You're checking for eggs. Not crickets, but you're checking for eggs. He's going to pull my hand out, and he snaps me, man. He's a big dude. He's around 90 grams. The original one that I got from Christie, he's up over, I think he's over 100 grams. He's like 110, 117 grams.
Wow.
And he's a big dude, and they're thin. I keep my geckos thin. If anybody's bought them from me, they know that. We don't by any means have ours chunked up, but they say the lean 110, 117 he is, but this guy here is right around 90, and I just like his coloration on him, real, and his eyes are pretty cool too.
They are, and they're all coming out with solid eyes mostly. Is that what you're saying?
From our Pure Eclipse line, we're I'd say about 30% of our Pure Eclipse are coming out with solid eyes. It's kind of funny on the Eclipse line is. And if I could talk about that a little bit, but we got a lavender eclipse line that we picked up, or a lavender raptor line that we started doing. I originally thought 5 years ago it was a different eye genetic, and then I crossed it to our Pure Eclipse line, and it's compatible, but a lot of the early ones, they actually look like marble eyes. I still might get people email me back saying, hey, this doesn't look like Eclipse. It's got a funky eye. And I'm like, I know it does. Trust me, it's Eclipse. I test bred them out. But that line, we produce 90% plus solid bright red eyes in our trempers. And then they're brighter red than most raptors, too. And some geckos seem to hold more melanism than other geckos. Our G63 stuff is darker melanism stuff. I think it makes it darker hues. We get the albinos. They almost look like Bill albinos on that G63 line. They're real dark. And in our lavender stuff, everything's real white and the eyes are real bright. But it's just kind of neat to see how that runs in between different lines. They're both tremper lines. They just display differently.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool. Interesting stuff. Well, Thad, I'd like to give you the opportunity to have some closing remarks before we wrap stuff up.
Closing remarks? Well, no, I just wish everybody a happy, safe holidays coming up. You know, good luck with projects. Thank you, David, for putting Gecko Nation Radio together, all your time that you put into it. You formed an awesome community here, and you do a super job keeping it going and getting interesting shows going with different toppings. I look forward to listening every week to the show. So,
oh, thank you.
And we're excited. You know, I think everybody knows we're pretty much, we do all shipping through the winter because I coach wrestling. And my two boys are both in high school wrestling this year, so we're pretty much down. We go to a couple shows. I don't know if we're going to be at White Plains or I'm going to have somebody go for us, but, you know, we'll see some of you guys out there at White Plains if we're out there. If not, I got a buddy, Jim Gock, and hopefully we'll be able to do it for us. But, you know, we'll see you guys around, and we'll be back in business at the shows in March.
All right, cool beans. Well, I'm sure if I don't see you at the show, I'll see you at the next one. But, yeah, definitely, Pat. Have a great holiday this year and to 2014. And I hope all your projects go really well. And definitely let's have you back in the new year.
All right, Dave. Thank you. You too, bud.
All right. Good luck with the Gecko Forums, and I'll see you online.
Very good.
All right. Later. All right, everybody, let me play the outro, and I'll come back with my closing remarks.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David Fine Gecko's creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. The jazz music you heard tonight was generously donated and created by Jeremy Turgeon of J&D Reptiles. Thank you very much, Jeremy, for the great musical pieces. You can check out Jeremy at J&D Reptiles on YouTube and on Facebook. And a very special thank you to our news anchor, graphic designer, and audio tech, Steve Barker. All the graphics, audio sponsor plugs, and music overlays were assembled by Steve. Check out Steve on YouTube at BC Barker Creations. He has some terrific videos for the herp community with amazing geckos and snakes. Please support the U.S. Herpetocultural Alliance. They are our most effective defense against legislation that threatens our rights of exotic animal ownership. Sign up for their newsletter and donate if you can at usherp.org.
Okay, everybody, another awesome episode comes to a close. And I'd like to, at this time, just take the time to seriously thank, number one, Steve Barker for everything that he does for this show. His videos are just such a, I don't know, they're such an important part of what we're doing. It not only helps get the word out about the upcoming episodes, but it highlights the guests very, very well. And it's no small task for him. He definitely puts a lot of time into this. So I want to thank you, Steve. I also want to thank Jeremy for the music that he's lent to the show. Very talented musician and music writer. So thank you for that jazz music, Jeremy. I want to say it personally and not just in the plug. I want to thank all of you guys in the chat room. You guys are awesome. All the hardcore fans that follow the show every week, it wouldn't be the same without you all. My closing remarks are simply this. You see what Dad is doing with those geckos. They're not all, you know, new combos or new crazy morphs. You guys can all do this. You can notice something special about thing you're working on, and you can develop it. It's going to take years, but that's what we do. So get involved and do it. And get yourself known for something really cool. All right, everybody. I'll see you next week. Thanks. Gecko Nation Radio, out.